Chapter 9. Dark Days. Winston had many things to think about. Nicholson and his brave men at Calais, Halifax and Mussolini, and the hundreds of little boats sailing through the night across the channel to Dunkirk. The next morning, 27th of May, at 7:15 a.m., he received some worrying news from the British Navy in Dover. According to this message, a bad situation is developing between Calais and Dunkirk. The enemy have brought 40 guns as far as Gravelines, the small town between Calais and Dunkirk, and are destroying ships approaching Dunkirk. If the small boats could not reach the harbour to collect the British soldiers, the BEF would soon be surrounded by the German army, with no way to escape. Halifax was busy preparing the paper about a possible peace agreement for his colleagues. But when he arrived at the 11:30 a.m. meeting of the War Cabinet, he also had some bad news. He had learned from the Belgian embassy in London that the King of Belgium, King Leopold III, was considering surrendering to Germany and making a separate peace agreement with Hitler. Winston immediately sent a message to the Belgian king, asking him not to do that. The Belgian army was in the north of France, fighting beside the BEF, although they did not know that there was a plan to evacuate the British soldiers. If the Belgian army surrendered and stopped fighting at that moment, it would be very easy for the Germans to attack the BEF from the north. The British ambassador in Washington had sent a telegram to Halifax, suggesting that perhaps Britain could give some of its colonies in the New World to America to pay for war equipment. Halifax was ready to consider this idea, but Winston refused. He said that the US had given Britain very little help, and Britain might need those colonies itself. He then asked his military leaders to examine the idea of our continuing the war alone against Germany and probably Italy, before the next meeting of the War Cabinet. This meeting, which was a very important one, happened later that afternoon at 4:30 p.m. There were usually 20 people at War Cabinet meetings, but at this meeting there were only 8. Winston, Halifax, Chamberlain, Clement Attlee and Arthur Greenwood, the Labour MPs, Sir Alexander Cadogan, Halifax's close colleague in the Foreign Office, Sir Archibald Sinclair, the Liberal Party leader and an old friend of Winston's, and Sir Edward Bridges, who recorded what happened at War Cabinet meetings. There was only one subject to discuss: whether to approach Mussolini about a possible peace agreement, as Halifax had suggested. The day before, the French Prime Minister, Paul Reynaud, had sent a message suggesting that the governments of Britain and France should approach Mussolini together. Halifax had written down his ideas in a paper that he had already sent to the people at the meeting. He suggested telling Mussolini that if he made a peace agreement with Britain and France, both countries would do their best to help Italy. Halifax also said that President Roosevelt had already written to Mussolini about this, but had not received an answer. Everybody at the meeting gave their opinions, one by one. Sir Archibald Sinclair and the two Labour MPs were very much against the idea of approaching Mussolini. Like Winston, they were afraid that an agreement with Mussolini could be seen as a first step to peace talks between Britain and Germany. Then Winston said there was no purpose in approaching Mussolini. He did not believe that France was ready to surrender, but even if this happened, Britain would not go down with France. The best help Britain could give to Reynaud, said Winston, was to show him that we were going to fight it out to the end. At the moment, Many people in Europe believed that Britain was in a very weak position, and the only way to change their minds was by showing the world that Germany had not beaten us. If Britain approached Mussolini to talk about peace, said Winston, this would have no purpose and could even be a disaster for Britain. If the worst happened and Britain was beaten in the war, it would not be a bad thing for this country to go down fighting for other countries that the Nazis had attacked and invaded. Winston and Halifax had not agreed with each other many times in the past, and now it was happening again. It was clear that Winston had very different ideas from Halifax. Halifax felt very surprised and frustrated because the day before, Winston had thought it might be possible to approach Mussolini. However, it now seemed that he had changed his mind and was strongly against it. Halifax could not understand what Winston was trying to do. Like Winston, he loved his country very much, and he really believed that a peace agreement was the best hope for Britain. He did not want more young people to lose their lives in war, and he did not believe that peace talks would be a danger or a disaster. But almost everyone else in the room was on Winston's side, and Halifax found himself alone. The only person to support him was his friend and colleague, Chamberlain. Winston knew that he had to be careful about Halifax. Halifax was the Foreign Secretary, and many Conservative MPs supported him. He needed to keep Halifax on his side, because some people were still not confident that Winston was a good leader. If Halifax decided to resign, they could turn against Winston. Then the Conservative MPs would form two groups, those who supported peace and those who were against it. This would be very bad for Britain at a time when it was important for all the members of the government to work together. So now Winston said that, although he would not join France in asking for a peace agreement, if he was told what the results of that agreement were, he would be ready to consider them. Once again, it seemed that Winston had changed his mind. The War Cabinet sent a message to Reynaud, agreeing that the French could approach Mussolini. After the meeting, Halifax asked Winston if he could speak to him privately in the garden of No. 10 Downing Street. As Halifax was leaving the room, he said to his colleague, Alexander Cadogan, "I can't work with Winston anymore." In the garden, Halifax said he was thinking of resigning, but Winston said he was sorry and persuaded him to stay in his job. Later that day, at 7 p.m, there was another meeting to discuss the latest news from France. The BEF was in an even worse situation and was retreating to the coast. Winston told the War Cabinet that Britain had done everything possible to support its allies. However, the French military leaders had made some serious mistakes, and the Belgian government had also been very weak. They had not wanted Belgium to enter the war and had not allowed British and French soldiers to enter Belgium. When the German army invaded Belgium, there were no troops to stop them. So now the BEF was in a dangerous position. Later, Winston received news that King Leopold III of Belgium had approached the Germans to discuss surrendering. When Winston told the War Cabinet this, they felt sorry for King Leopold III. The Belgian government, not the king, were responsible for what had happened. The government had left Belgium, but the king had stayed in his country with his troops to support him. The Minister of Information, Duff Cooper, advised Winston to tell the British people about the BEF's true situation. He said that the public did not know what was really going on in the war, because the newspapers mostly reported only positive things about what was happening in France. If people knew the truth, they would be shocked, but it would also prepare them for more bad news if and when it came. Winston agreed to give a speech to Parliament in a week's time and returned to Admiralty House with his private secretary, Jock Colville. He worked till midnight, then went up to bed. He had a lot of things to think about. Was Halifax right? Was he himself wrong? Had he done the right thing for Britain in not allowing Halifax to move forward with his peace plan? What was the best thing to do now? Halifax described Tuesday, 28th of May, as a very black day. News came that the Belgian army had surrendered at 4 a.m. that morning. At the 11:30 a.m. meeting of the War Cabinet, Winston read out the important parts of the peace agreement between Belgium and Germany. 1. The Belgian troops were not allowed to move. They had to stand by the side of the road in a line, waiting for orders and holding white signs and flags. 2. No war equipment could be destroyed. 3. The way to the coast had to be open for German troops. 4. The way to Ostend had to be open, and nothing was to be destroyed. 5. If the Belgians refused to follow orders, they would be punished. Meanwhile, large numbers of British troops had begun to arrive at Dunkirk. A report was received from Dover that 11,400 British soldiers had arrived there the night before, and that another 2,500 men were already on their way across the Channel. There were 2,000 soldiers waiting on the beaches of Dunkirk to be evacuated, and 7,000 in the hills of sand behind the beaches. The British Royal Air Force were protecting the soldiers, but the Luftwaffe had destroyed many of the British planes. Winston made a short speech on the national radio news at 1 p.m. and spoke to Parliament later that afternoon. He said that the British and French armies were in a dangerous situation and that the Belgian army had surrendered, but the troops were fighting well and were in good heart. Winston's political colleagues were very happy about his speech, and many people thanked him afterwards. At 4 p.m. that afternoon, the War Cabinet met again with the same 8 people as the day before. Halifax spoke first and said that President Roosevelt had received an answer from Mussolini, but it had not been helpful. Meanwhile, the French had sent a stronger message, asking for Britain and France to approach Mussolini together. Winston was very much against this idea, and he and Halifax argued about it for a long time. Halifax, supported by Chamberlain, could not understand what was wrong with the idea of asking Mussolini to act in possible peace talks between Britain and Germany. Chamberlain said that if Britain could keep its independence, and if the important parts of the peace agreement look good, it should be ready to consider it. Winston refused to accept this, and the meeting finished at 6:15 p.m., still with no decision made about peace talks. Earlier that day, Winston had asked for a meeting with the 25 other ministers who were not part of the War Cabinet. He had not had a chance to speak to them about Britain's situation since he became Prime Minister, and he knew that some of them were still not happy about him as leader. Winston knew that if Halifax, his Foreign Secretary, was no longer going to support him, he needed his full cabinet of ministers on his side. As Winston walked over to Parliament, he thought carefully about what he was going to say. The ministers were all waiting for him in his office. As he entered, they became silent, afraid of what he was going to tell them. What was going to happen? Was the British army destroyed? Was Hitler going to invade? Were they going to lose their homes, families, and way of life? Winston told the ministers that he had decided to prepare the British people for bad news. Some people would say that the situation in northern France would be the greatest British military defeat for many centuries, and we must now be prepared for the sudden turning of the war against this island. The British people must not be told that France could soon surrender. But if this happened, said Winston, it would be easier to defend this island alone than to defend this island plus France. He added that if Britain was going to fight on alone, it was possible that the United States could enter the war on Britain's side. Winston spoke in a very positive way about Britain's military forces. He said that although the Germans would probably try to invade Britain, this would be very difficult for them. The British Navy was extremely strong, the Air Force was very well organised, and Britain had enough food and oil and very good troops, with help from troops in countries in the British Empire. British factories were also busy producing more planes. Winston also said that he had considered making a peace agreement with Hitler, but there was no good reason for this. The Germans would then be able to take Britain's navy and many other things, so it was better for Britain to continue fighting. If the time had come for Britain's Long Island story to finish, that would only happen when each one of us lies in his own blood upon the ground. Winston spoke from his heart and proved again that he was an excellent speaker. He had made it clear that he was not going to support Halifax's ideas of peace, even though he was risking the chance of Halifax resigning. He had decided to return to his own first idea, that it was better to fight on. This great speech by Winston brought all his ministers onto his side. Several jumped up and ran around the table to thank him. When the War Cabinet met again at 7 p.m. that evening, Winston told them what had happened and that all the ministers were supporting him. Halifax and Chamberlain realised that Winston had beaten them, and they never mentioned the idea of a peace agreement between Britain and Germany again. Winston was very happy because he knew that his political colleagues supported him and felt confident about him. Before he went to bed, he called Paul Reynaud, the French Prime Minister, to say that, if necessary, Britain would continue fighting alone, although he hoped the French would not surrender.